It is strange and often surprising what we miss, isn't it? One of the things I miss most about New York City is my old train station. It sat on the Hudson line of the Metro North commuter rail, which wound up from Manhattan and north to Poughkeepsie, running alongside the Hudson River almost the entire time. My stop was called Spuitendijvel, an old Dutch name that out-of-towners found impossible to pronounce and nearly everyone had trouble spelling. The train conductors all called it Spuits for short. I loved that nickname and the relish with which they barked it. But to be fair, I loved everything about that stop. The station sat right underneath the high arch of the Henry Hudson Bridge at that picturesque juncture where the Harlem River meets the Hudson. Sometimes while I waited on the train platform, I would take snapshots of it. It was beautiful in all seasons, but most glorious in fall when the trees were in an outright riot of colors. I felt fortunate to have that be the place where I departed from and returned to each workday. What a gorgeous portal it was. I was convinced that it was the prettiest station in the whole system, and I think the people at Metro North agreed with me. Because the poster the railroad commissioned to celebrate its 25th anniversary depicts a commuter train pulling into Spuitendijvel in the fading evening light. I kept a version of that poster in my office downtown to remind me what I would find waiting for me when I returned home. The spot was almost impossibly idyllic. Then, in the late fall of 2013, in earliest December, the first Sunday after Thanksgiving, near the start of the holiday season, a horrible accident happened there, the worst in the history of the railroad. Listening to the radio, I heard about it on my way to church, and during the service, we prayed for everyone involved, not knowing who would survive. I admit I failed to grasp the total magnitude of it until I came home and heard the helicopters circling loudly overhead. When I turned on the television, I saw how massive the derailment was, how many train cars had jumped the tracks. The engine took that curve along the riverbank at unthinkable speed, and 4 people were dead from the crash and more than 60 injured, some permanently disabled. I watched the news coverage longer than I should until my husband Ben suggested that I turn it off, but I found myself transfixed by the tragedy. There were, of course, all those New Yorkers whose holidays, Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, New Year's, were ruined before they even began. And then there was the veteran conductor who was presumed responsible and under investigation. There were our neighbors and their children, too, who woke up to those sounds early in the morning. Our lovely local site was now a disaster area. I wondered if it would ever again seem as beautiful to me and all the other passengers as it had, or if some notion of ours had been forever lost. At the start of this 2020 holiday season, we might all find ourselves transfixed by the large-scale tragedy unfolding around us, and arrested by the scale of such massive loss. We've seen a tragedy span the width of our country, and the coronavirus is still spreading across the United States at record-breaking rates. Already we have lost more than 250,000 lives, and now we are approaching nearly 200,000 hospitalizations. In some cases, state closures and restrictions are pointing the way to more lockdowns, and Americans are still struggling to understand the scope of this catastrophe. The economy is again hard hit. Students have been sent home. Travel plans, perhaps yours, have been canceled. People are quarantined and feeling isolated, These are dark days, such difficult days. Some of us have lost our friends, and some of us have lost our family members to COVID-19, while others have lost people in deaths that have gotten overshadowed by this pandemic, deaths, I dare say, that are not entirely unrelated to it. So to celebrate Thanksgiving in the midst of this feels almost perverse. I admit that. Everything seems to have gone off the rails, and the pile-up and pile-on effects cannot be denied. In some sense, we are all witnessing a proverbial train wreck in slow motion and somehow cannot look away from it. Not while the catastrophe continues. But day in, day out, our lives continue as well, with traces of normalcy. That should not escape our notice if we count ourselves among the survivors of the COVID-19 pandemic. As the Reverend Mark Ward assures us, there is cause for gratitude. We are always given the option to be grateful, and we can take it. Actually, that can be a legitimate spiritual response to hardship and heartache. The sacred scriptures of several religious traditions tell us this, and so do physicians and social scientists studying positive psychology and mental health. The Reverend Dr. Galen Gingrich, Unitarian Universalist minister and author of The Way of Gratitude, A New Spirituality for Today, declares, "Even in the midst of great distress, I am grateful that life has come my way." In his heavily autobiographical book, he describes an overall orientation instead of a personal attitude. He notes this crucial distinction between feeling grateful and being grateful. We can practice gratitude even when we are not feeling grateful. In fact, that might be the time when the practice becomes most beneficial to us. We are not entitled to be alive in the first place, and therefore we shouldn't take the gift of each new day for granted. This is not to say that life is always wonderful, nor that each new day brings only good things, Dr. Gingrich explains. But there are many good things in our lives, even astonishing things. And we need to remind ourselves of what's in our catalog of astonishment. How is your catalog of astonishment being kept these days? The primary thing for us to be astonished by is the continuance of our exceedingly contingent existences. Dr. Gingrich notes that we rely constantly on other people and social circumstances and nature itself for our very survival. Our radical interdependence is something the pandemic has foregrounded to the discomfort and disbelief of some of our fellow Americans. It's hard to recall another time when our collective and individual survival has felt so tentative, apart perhaps from the days immediately following 9/11. Dr. Gingrich is senior minister at All Souls in Manhattan, where I spent a couple of years doing my student ministry. The benediction at All Souls was a standard piece of liturgy. It was a variation on the priestly blessing contained in the Hebrew scriptures, and we all had it memorized. "Now in our coming and our going, may the light of God shine upon us and out from within us and be gracious unto us and grant us peace," we would say at the conclusion of worship. "For this is the day we are given. Let us rejoice and be glad in it." Dr. Gingrich said those same words the Sunday right after 9/11, and he meant them. We all did. Each time. Just saying the words proved convincing enough, made us glad and brought us joy and caused a gracious light to shine upon us and somehow brought us peace. We need to charge life with being unfair and brutal because it is sometimes, but we also need to charge it with being astonishing and amazing, because it's often that too, Dr. Gingrich contends. We can experience joy not only when things are going our way, but also when times are tough. He links joy with gratitude, noting that the practice of gratitude inevitably leads to a personal experience of joy. Any joy we know this holiday season will, no doubt, be hard won. That does not mean that it is not worth our winning. To the contrary, it means we should remain intentional about our aim, because as so many religious traditions teach us, joy is our birthright. My hope this year is that we can encourage one another to the practice of gratitude and the experience of joy. Starting today and throughout the week of Thanksgiving, I will invite you all to post to our UU Wellesley Hills group share just a few things you are grateful for now. Since many of you will be kept apart from the friends and families that you ordinarily spend your Thanksgiving day with, I suggest you instead call someone from this congregation and express your gratitude to them. If you bought food for a Thanksgiving feast you will no longer prepare, I urge you to donate it to a food bank in the Boston area. Allow a spirit of gratitude to pervade these coming days. Beginning the first Tuesday in December, I will lead a weekly Gifts of Gratitude group that I hope you all will attend at least once. In our group meetings, we will look closely into the way of gratitude that Dr. Gingrich outlines in his book. We will also take the opportunity to discover our own ways as well. What are your ways of cataloging your gratitude? Before he became a UU minister, Dr. Gingrich was, like his father and grandfather before him, a Mennonite minister. Raised in the conservative Mennonite church, he came in his 20s to conclude that he could no longer serve it with any authenticity or integrity, that he needed something that felt more spiritually aligned with his own worldview. In our UU tradition, he found the twin truths that we all originate from a common source and that we all share an ultimate destiny, truly inspiring. Yet he never forgot his earliest religious influences and formative experiences. On a visit to a familiar Mennonite community, Dr. Gingrich was asked by his wife how returning there made him feel. "Ambivalent," he replied. "On the one hand, I feel claustrophobic. On the other hand, this is the mine where my gold came from." We would all do well to admit the ambivalent nature of so much of our gratitude. He points out, for instance, that he is grateful for an earlier marriage that ended in divorce because his ex-wife is the mother of the daughter he adores. In our own lives, many of us have mined in places that were dark or confined or dangerous, places where we might have been trapped for a while. And still, we eventually emerged with something precious. Perhaps these past few months will have greater meaning and deeper value for us in the years to come. I suspect so. Much as we would like to wish these months away, they have lessons to teach us. We are learning much more than we would care to about all the aspects in which America itself is unwell. While we have good reason to believe that an effective vaccine will soon become available, thank God, it will not cure all that ails us. That will involve more extensive recovery plans. Together, we are coming to a clearer understanding of what we need to be healthy: adequate care and equal access and basic security of our persons. We may never be grateful for this pandemic, but we might be grateful for what it has taught us already and what it is teaching us now. A dear friend once told me that if that if we have people and places and things that we miss, we should count ourselves lucky. A lot of us are lucky now to a degree we never expected. Those things we are missing need to be counted among our blessings this Thanksgiving. We should be grateful for the yearnings that point us to what matters most in our lives. While the extensive wreckage was being cleared from Spuyten Duyvil, our station remained closed. Services to other stations up and down the Hudson Line was disrupted for weeks to follow, then months, while we rode our shuttle buses back and forth. Of course, if I were to engineer the world, the mechanics of everything would be faultless, and I would eliminate tragedy altogether. But apparently no one is hiring for that job, and in my heart of hearts, I know that I'm not entirely qualified. None of us are. But we can do things to improve our common lot all the same. Spuyten Duyvil translates from the Dutch as spouting devil. It's an apt name for the juncture of two rivers where the cross currents are ferocious. These days, we all feel ourselves caught in the cross currents of our moment in history. We ought to take this chance to help one another ferry through them. Gratitude always acknowledges that life links us with possibility. In the aftermath of the Spuyten Duyvil derailment, federally mandated safety controls were adopted early, and the railroad began testing its employees for sleep disorders so that no one would again nod off at the controls early on a Sunday morning. Metro North acknowledged that it had, to use its own term, a deficient safety culture that privileged on-time performance and shortchanged training programs. The regulatory agency charged with its oversight was heartened by how quickly Metro North adopted measures and made changes, definitive changes, for the good. It decided that it would no longer prize speed and moving at the pace of business above all else. There's a wise maxim often quoted by helping professionals: never let a good crisis go to waste. The railroad dared not squander such a disaster. My highest hope is that once the COVID-19 catastrophe comes to its long, long overdue conclusion, we Americans can attend to all of its tragic consequences and analyze the extensive wreckage and aftermath with a sensitivity to human costs, at once tremendously saddened by the errors that were made, and grateful, deeply, deeply grateful for the opportunity to correct them. The name of my favorite station in all of New York City became synonymous with tragedy, and suddenly, sadly, everyone knew how to pronounce it. After the rails were replaced and repairs were made and improvements at the station were finished, it looked a lot like its lovely old self, shrouded by a somber fog. Over time, I came to see that its beauty was not diminished, but existed alongside a complicated history and profound heartache. And the scene there became all the more poignant for that, especially in fall. "O world, I cannot hold thee close enough," the poet declared one autumn day. "World, world, I cannot get thee close enough." Can you get it close enough? Can any of us? Every year around this time, I still think of those train conductors walking up and down the cars, shouting, "Spites! Spites!" In my office at home, I have that picturesque railroad print out as a reminder of them, of the lost, and of all of us after that Sunday. This year, I hope our Thanksgiving, and indeed our entire 2020 holiday season, can be a time of spites. When we can be grateful in spite of ourselves, when we can manage to stay safe despite the surrounding dangers, when we can stay connected and aware despite our isolation and division, when we can see the beauty of life despite its obvious and continuous heartbreak, when we can hold out sincere hope despite any creeping despair. Do it, the old Dutch would say, to spite the devil. I say, do it simply because you can.